Broadcasting from high atop Rocky Road in Moab, Utah, this is KZMU News. I'm Emily Ernson. Today on the show, we'll hear part one of a series about the unsolved rape and murder of a local woman, Ann Woodward. The 1973 cold case was reopened by the Moab police after a missing box of evidence was found earlier this fall. And the lead investigator is pretty certain he'll find the culprit, even if it means exhuming the bodies of his dead suspects to collect their DNA. The story of Ann Woodward is a story about a family and a community completely rattled by a tragedy. It's about grief that's been passed down through generations. It's about small-town rumors and a mistrust of law enforcement. It's a story about being an outsider in a small town, being a woman with a working-class job, and how the way that we treat outsiders and women in Moab today maybe hasn't changed that much since 1973. All that to come in future episodes, but today we're just going to focus on the new investigation and why this murder has gone unsolved for so long. Woody's Tavern is the local dive in Moab. There are other places to drink in town, but Woody's is kind of like the bar. Everyone goes there. Thing is, though, most locals today don't even know who Woody is. They don't know the story of the Woodward family, and that's because a big part of that story was lost. Literally, in a storage unit of the Grand County Sheriff's Department for over half a century, until recently. Now that story is ready to be told again. It starts like this.
March 2nd, 1973, Ann went to work. She was a barkeep at Woody's. Her and her husband owned the bar.
This is Jeremy Drexler. He's the criminal investigator with the Moab Police who recently reopened the cold case.
She drove to the bar. She had patrons in at the bar, and she never came home.
When Ann's husband, Woody, woke up the next morning and realized she was missing, he rushed down to the bar. He found Ann lying between two pool tables, strangled to death with her own trousers. Right away, Woody called his friend, the Grand County Sheriff at the time, Heck Bowman. This is an important detail, calling Heck Bowman, because it set off a series of mishaps that led to a botched investigation and the disappearance of crucial evidence for decades. But in September, Drexler found that missing evidence.
Where was the evidence?
Yeah, it was old storage at the Sheriff's Department. It was actually on a shelf back next to some Geiger counters. So the evidence was not labeled as evidence, I guess you could say. Just a beat-up cardboard box with dust on it.
Can you tell me what the evidence is?
Yeah, absolutely. It was everything that was taken from 1973. There were 29 items of evidence from the medical examiner's office, from the homicide, Ann's fingerprints, Ann's clothing, and all the way to anything that the medical examiner's office would take off her body and take as evidence. So you're talking hairs, fibers, DNA, and stuff like that.
A few months ago, Drexler sent that evidence to the state forensics lab for DNA testing.
I'm very confident that with now what we have, we will be able to say this is the person that changed the Woodward's family life on March 2nd, 1973.
When you're sending this evidence to the state of Utah to do the DNA testing, what are they checking it against?
The first off is the process is obviously running the pieces of evidence to see if they have DNA traces left on them. Now, we know, obviously, it's going to have DNA traces of Ann left on it, and most likely it's going to have DNA traces of the perpetrator left on it as well. Now, at that point, you may have somebody and you have a DNA profile and you enter that into the federal database of CODIS.
CODIS stands for Combined DNA Index System. It's a nationwide database of DNA samples, mostly from convicted felons. Different states have different laws about when DNA can be collected. In some states, just getting arrested is enough to get a sample. But at the very least, all states require DNA from convicted felons. The program started in 1994, so there's a good chance a DNA profile of the 1973 suspect might not exist in the database.
Everybody that I could see right now that was a suspect back then, I have all their obituaries and know where they're buried, just in case we've got to go there for DNA. So that's one of the things that I had to do is find out where they were all buried at.
Oh, so there's a possibility that you would have to unbury them to confirm?
Yeah.
And that's something the police can do.
Yeah. You got to do it with a search warrant. There have been agencies that have literally exhumed people because the DNA profile was a possible match and there was enough probable cause to execute a search warrant to unfortunately do that.
Wow. Yeah. So wait, are all of the suspects dead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Earlier this month, the forensics lab got back to Drexler. they did find DNA in the evidence. They don't know whose yet, but Drexler says it's a promising sign. He wasn't even sure there'd be any DNA in the evidence at all. Right now, there are three main suspects. Two of them are men from California, who were working in the mines around Moab at the time. Their names are David Keith Brow and Doug Chedomelka. And the third suspect is Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy was one of three potential suspects?
Yeah. Yep. He always has been. He actually did a kidnap and a homicide in Grand Junction. He buried a body that hasn't been found in Price. And he also buried a body in Capitol Reef. So he is absolutely 100% traveled through. Some of the people that I chatted with can remember seeing possibly him on the streets. And then there was a possible sighting of him staying 6 months after the homicide at the Log Lodge Hotel. But there's some inconsistencies on the timeline with Ted, because I know between 1972 and 1973, Ted was off the radar after he was told he was not going to be in law school.
Bundy confessed to killing 8 women in Utah between 1974 and 1975, though police have ruled out 3 of those murders as false claims. Police also believe Bundy killed at least 3 women in Colorado. The Grand Junction murder happened in 1975. Drexler says he can't rule Bundy out just yet, but his main suspect is Chedomelka.
He is basically the top guy. He's always been number one. All the files that I've got, they basically latched onto him pretty early. His car matched. His alibi was crap.
During the initial investigation in the 70s, law enforcement collected Chedomelka's hair. They weren't thinking about DNA at the time. Instead, they were checking to see if the suspect's hair matched any hairs they might find on Ann's clothes or body. They weren't successful. But now, thanks to DNA testing, the tiny specks of skin at the end of those hair samples have enough DNA in them to make a DNA profile for Chedomelka. Drexler says that's what the lab will work on next. The lab already has a profile for Bundy, and hopefully they'll be able to make a profile for the third suspect, too. They'll also make a profile for Ann, and once they do that, they'll compare all of those standards against the new DNA they found in the evidence. And if the DNA doesn't match anything, they'll have to get creative.
A lot of these old cases are now being solved by using, you know, familia DNA, which is pulling that DNA record and seeing if anybody is a family member from the tree that's created, and then going from there. This case is a real possibility of that happening.
So then where do you get the family DNA? Is that from, like, what is that from?
Yeah, so you'd have to do a number of things. Obviously, we all know with the Golden State Killer, they utilized, you know, GEDmatch to find a match. And then when he discarded, I think he actually discarded a cigarette butt or a piece of pizza, and then they confirmed that he was actually their match at the time when they put surveillance on him. Some of the websites without a search warrant would not give you any of the information, which is appropriate. I think it's appropriate if I have a DNA profile on a homicide and I submit a search warrant to say, all I want to do is match this, maybe to a family member. As long as a judge, to me, has signed off on that, I think that would be appropriate.
So when you're talking about websites, you're talking about like Ancestry.com.
Yeah, there's a plethora of them. You know, okay. You're talking about GEDmatch, Ancestry.com, FamilyTreeAndMe.
So when do you get the results back?
Yeah, so the results could be back 4 hours to 2 years.
So we don't know who did it yet. But there are some other pretty big questions that still need to be answered here. Like, why was this evidence missing in the first place? Let's go back to the Grand County Sheriff, Heck Bowman. Woody's Tavern wasn't in his jurisdiction. The bar falls within the purview of the Moab police, and this is where things started to go wrong, especially since, apparently, the police and the sheriff's department didn't get along at the time.
I don't have any notes from the sheriff's department. I do have some notes from Melvin Dalton, who was the chief of police at the time. They kind of worked hand in hand, even though they really didn't like each other. But yeah, there's no notes from Bowman.
Isn't that suspicious?
No.
Why?
It's just because from 1973, the notes that they had down were the notes that you put to pen to paper, and that was it.
The Moab police took over the case, but apparently some of the evidence got lost in the handoff, and it stumped officers for years.
The old chief, Mike Navarre, had looked for the evidence for 26 years.
So why didn't Mike Navarre know that this evidence existed?
He didn't.
I know, but why? Why? How did Grand County didn't know that this box of evidence existed?
No.
So how did you find out?
Yeah, they didn't. So a lot of this evidence at one point was sent to the FBI and then came back. And you got to remember, from 1973, there was no records management systems. You know, if you call now for a theft, I put it in my records management system and I can find that theft 60 years from now. Back then, there was no records management system. It was literally notepad, paper, and that was it.
Small town politics were getting in the way of solving Ann's murder, and continued to get in the way even after there was turnover in the departments. So maybe it's worth mentioning that Drexler isn't from Moab. When he came here in 2023, he was asked to look at the case with fresh eyes.
When I first got here, my sergeant, Sergeant Neumeier, she had asked me, hey, do you mind taking a look at this? She knows the community quite well. You're talking about a small, tight-knit community where, you know, you may know all of the players, you may know all of the businessmen and stuff like that. And she's like, I think it would be a great idea to have an unattached party take a gander at this and look at this and see what you can do.
You've been listening to part one of a series on the unsolved murder of Ann Woodward. In part two, we'll hear from Ann's granddaughter about the toll this took on her family and whether at this point it even matters to her to know who did it. We talk about getting closure and moving on, with or without a verdict. Tune in tomorrow to KZMU News at noon and 6 p.m. to hear the second part of this story. You can also find KZMU News anytime online at our website, kzmu.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. This story was reported and produced by me, Emily Arntzen. Thanks for listening.